To your calls to Premier Gordon Campbell, 604-280-9898, Deanna.
Oh, hi. I'm a 40-year-old physician with two children under the age of five, and I'm in the Mercedes-Benz dealership Saturday trading my 4x4 SUV in for a smart car. And I sat there wondering, what sort of incentives are there for people to do this?
Today, I don't know what there would be for a smart car because I don't know enough about it, but I'm glad you're doing it. I think that we have put incentives in place for hybrid cars, and that incentive is $2,000 off the provincial sales tax. I don't know what it is for smart cars, and ma'am, that's exactly what we're looking at over the next year. I'll be asking the finance minister to look at various areas where people actually will be able to save taxes because they're acting smart and they're actually thinking about their impact in the environment, and those that are not will pay the regular tax that we're facing.
Deanna, there must have been an incentive for you to do it. What was the incentive to you?
Reducing my carbon imprint. The only thing I know is from my research, though, hybrids don't really make that big of a difference, and smart cars really do. And so I wonder, why are not government employees driving smart cars? Sure, it's a downside, but they're very safe, and you have to make sacrifices if you're going to make changes to your carbon profile.
Well, we're willing to listen to all of the information. Right now, what we've said is that all new government vehicles will be hybrids. In fact, they do have a major impact. One of the reasons people may say, well, it doesn't make too much impact, is there's not that many hybrids yet. But they're certainly growing. Ford has hybrids. Toyota has hybrids. Honda has hybrids now. So I think we're seeing that technology grow. And I can tell you, my own wife tells me that she drives, she gets for 60% as much in terms of cost or in terms of gasoline, she's getting 200% more distance traveled in her car. So she's having a substantially lower imprint in terms of what she's doing. And I think that that's something that we all want to try and do.
Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on one thing here on this coal-fired plant. I was really quite excited and happy to see that Premier Campbell and our government is continuing on their innovative ways and trying to figure out how we can use local resources while reducing the carbon imprint. I really do appreciate that. We're just wondering, though, is this going to be able to be used right now on existing plants, or is this just going to be for future plants?
Well, let me say that there's, I think, two important issues here. One is, we've said all new power by 2016, all existing power by 2016 will be net zero. As of today, this does not, again, it's another thing that doesn't require legislation. All new power will have net zero impacts on the environment in British Columbia. Everything that we do that's new will have a net zero impact. I think that's an important thing for people to understand. Yes, they could use, if they decided to, they could decide to move forward. We should remember this, though. There are no coal-fired plants in British Columbia today. 90% of our power today comes from, frankly, environmentally very friendly sources, and that's why we're number two in Canada. The second lowest
hydroelectric?
Yeah, mostly hydroelectric, but we're number
environmentally
two.
Friendly after the fact. I mean, it certainly wasn't when it was, when the dams were
built. I mean, in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, I think we should recognize that. And I think we all have to be at least truthful with one another that, you know, our existence here has an impact on the environment. And one of the things, the big changes is that it's human activities in many ways that is changing the environment. So we have to be aware of that as we move ahead. So we'll be encouraging new technologies to be used on existing power, but all new power that's brought onto the grid or brought in British Columbia will be net zero as of today.
Another listener says you send the wrong signal, expanding Delta Port and twinning the Portman Bridge.
Well, I think that there's two things. First of all, I think the reason that we're able to take some ambitious actions with regard to this plan is because we have a strong economy. A strong economy keeps people at work. In fact, more people at work than ever before. Keeps people at work, but also allows us to generate the resources we need to improve the sustainability. We're talking about greening our ports in the Pacific, working with other jurisdictions to make sure that we're not using the environment as a competitive advantage or disadvantage. I think in terms of the Pacific Gateway, though, and I do want to speak directly to this, for the first time in 20 years, we're opening a transit corridor, which is a critical transit corridor. It's a transit corridor that can take us all the way out, as far out as Chilliwack in the future. We are investing more in cycling paths than ever before. We are going to eliminate a huge amount of idling and congestion that takes place and that has an impact on the environment. So I believe with the technologies, with public transit, with new urban design, I think that we're going to see that there is a net zero and probably an improvement as a result of the Pacific Gateway.
My question is, I'm in the middle of renovations in my house, and I'm getting to the point where I'm going to be ordering windows, and I'm actually looking at a new source of heat. And I wonder how soon those tax incentives you talked about will be in place, and if I can expect to be able to take advantage of that, or what sort of time frame you might see.
We have tax incentives in today for sort of high energy furnaces and for energy efficient windows. The technology energy efficient windows they're already in place. So you could, I don't know exactly what they are, but I can get them for you if you leave your number. I think in terms of, you know, over the next year, I'm asking the finance minister to have a good hard look at the whole issue of tax shifts. I believe that we should leave more money in people's pockets personally, and then people should be encouraged to make the right choices. If you make the right choice, you'll save tax. And that's what we're really trying to, you know, we'll have to wrestle through over the next year.
More with the Premier after this.
Hi, Premier Campbell. My name's Maureen Broadfoot. I'm the spokesperson for the Tawasin Resident Saints Higher Voltage Overhead Lines. And I know you're aware that we've spent 2 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal costs battling a plan by BC Hydro and the BC Transmission Corporation to run new high voltage lines for Vancouver Island over our backyards and over our schoolyards. You're also, I'm sure, aware that on Monday the BC Court of Appeal ruled that the precautionary principle should be part of our legal case, and the Canadian Cancer Society has written to the Environmental Assessment Office advising them to revise this route through Tawasin and recommending that they adopt the precautionary principle. My question to you is that while I applaud your modeling of California on climate change, California also has regulations in place that, for example, new transmission lines can't be built within 300 feet of schools, and they require utility companies to spend 4% of the budget on EMF mitigation for things like undergrounding or ensuring safe buffer zones, because they recognize that there is mounting scientific evidence linking exposure to cancer and other illnesses. So I'd like to know whether you're also going to look, is the province prepared to adopt some of those policies that California, Connecticut, several other states are putting in place to protect people's health?
Mr. Campbell.
Well, I mean, frankly, this is an issue that's been ongoing in Tawasin. I think that we have had not just BC Hydro, but the Utilities Commission has got to look at this and understand all the impacts. There's going to be environmental assessments. In terms of adopting California standards for this, I frankly don't know what they are. I can't give the answer to that, right? So we are trying to be aware of what the citizens are concerned about. We are concerned about making sure that those things are taken into consideration before a decision is made. But I can't make a commitment today that we're adopting regulations in Connecticut that I don't know about.
You're listening to The Bill Good Show on CKNW. We would like to say hello to Dave Swenson of Surrey. Dave, call us within 30 minutes to get $100 cash and be entered to win this week's trip for two to the elegant Fairmont Empress in Victoria with Helijet. You'll also qualify to win the grand prize trip for two to London, England, courtesy of CKNW and Canadian Affair. Want to be part of the action? Become a CKNW News Club member today at cknw.com. Stephen, good morning.
Oh, hi, question for Gordon Campbell.
Yes, go ahead.
All the talk about hybrid cars and emission standards, up here in the interior, we do a lot of driving and some pretty big vehicles, and we have to, for work, to get up to log and block or for welding, or how's that going to affect us up here?
Very good question.
Well, I think that, you know, everyone's, and frankly, all of the automobile dealers are looking at how they can control emission standards, and it will have to be done for trucks and major equipment as well as for smaller cars. We're starting, I think everyone recognizes we should be starting with cars. About 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from vehicular traffic, and we're going to have to be aware of those things. But again, you know, I don't think that anyone should think that there is a one answer that's going to work for everything. I think that's the whole point of setting up the advisory council. It's the whole point of working with industry and environmental groups and business groups, community groups. I think that we have to put in place a plan that people can say this is realistic, it's understandable, and we're going to make it work.
But isn't this a case where the carbon offset concept that you talked about might apply? There are people who are going to have to drive an SUV. There are people who are going to have to drive a pickup truck, and hopefully those trucks will become more efficient. But in the meantime,
in the meantime, all of us are in a position, and certainly we can start buying carbon offsets today. There are, carbon offsets are available through the Internet today. In British Columbia, we want to establish carbon offsets that can be used in British Columbia that benefit all of our us and all of our economy. So, yes, that's another area where people can act. You know, people... I do want to say this. People are in a position where they can take all kinds of individual actions that will help us. What they've said to the government is, please set a framework that's fair for all of us, and then let us make some choices that reflect our values, and that's what we're going to try and do.
Explain, though, what a carbon offset is.
Carbon offset is, if you can't get down to zero, it allows you to buy greenhouse gas free or resources that actually reduce the impact of greenhouse gas in other ways. So you might, for example, an alternative energy form might be another way. A solar power might be a different kind, be a way of offsetting. Some of the battery power, the fuel cell things might be a way of offsetting. Tree planting might be a way of offsetting the carbon impact that you've got.
What about the concern that some people have, and I know I got some email on this, buying from countries, importing material from countries that are not adopting the kinds of standards that we have, and I presume they were looking primarily to China.
Yeah. Well, again, those are issues I think that I think all of us have to make choices about. One of the things that I'm aware of is in North America, in Canada, in British Columbia, we're very fortunate. We're in a position right now where we have a healthy economy, where we can actually take some steps that set an example for other people. And I think it's difficult for us to go and say to others, you should do something, when our carbon imprint is far greater than theirs. Our carbon imprint in Canada is pretty huge. It's about, my recollection is, it's two or three times bigger than the carbon imprint of an average citizen in the United Kingdom. It's much, much bigger than the carbon imprint of a citizen in a country like China or India. So what I'm saying is, we have an economy that allows us to change and to transform it, to be more sensible and sensitive to our impacts on the environment. Let's do that. Let's create the leadership that's needed so others can follow our example.
Jamie.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I really have to question the Premier's commitment to actually do something about climate change. Now, I've heard from a very reliable source that if you want to know what Gordon Campbell's really thinking, listen to Michael Campbell. And over the last 3 weeks on this station, Michael Campbell has offered up sunspots and cow flatulence as causes for global warming. And I'd like to hear the Premier distance himself from those kind of comments.
Well, first of all, I speak for myself, and Michael Campbell speaks for himself, and I welcome his comments all the time, obviously, and I'm sure he welcomes mine. I have said today to you that I think that human beings are having a major impact on the environment. We as human beings, each of us, you and I, have got to take action. So I've taken some actions. I may well need to take more actions personally, and I will, and I hope you will as well. I'm saying from the government's perspective, we should set a level playing field so everyone can exercise their choices that actually reflect their concerns about the environment. I also think that we're going to have to set some regulations in place. We've already talked about that today. We may well need legislation, but that legislation is going to be driven by consultations with non-government groups, with scientists, with community groups, with industry groups, to make sure we have a plan that works. In British Columbia, we're going to make this work.
Marion.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Campbell.
Hi.
I don't really pretend to know as much as I would like to know about the Gateway Project, but specifically the twinning of the Portman Bridge. I've been trying to get on every time Bill has anything to do with this subject on, but it's difficult. But
you made it today.
I did. Take
advantage of it.
I wanted to know, what about a rail system? Instead of, like, to prevent all the emissions from cars, instead of moving vehicles, we could just move people. We could have a rail system all the way from Chilliwack to Vancouver. Looks to me, I mean, I haven't driven the whole distance since last year, but from Chilliwack to Vancouver, there's a whole median that's already got the space there. Seems to me would be a great idea.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I think that this makes a lot of sense for us to put together as a project. It opens this transit route for the first time in 20 years. The reason transit has not been able to use the Portman Corridor is because it's totally unreliable in terms of timing, in terms of people depending on it. We have to make transit work for people. We're investing over $2 billion, even today, we're investing in expanding rapid transit. We're going to have a plan that takes into consideration the region. I do want to say one thing, Bill, before we close, and that is, it's not just about connecting places. It's actually looking at things like Sam Sullivan's talked about in the city, like eco density. We have to have places that actually work for urban transit. So I'm looking to the city of Surrey for additional cultural, educational, residential density in their downtown core, just as we have it here in Vancouver. We made a decision to take commercial space out of downtown Vancouver, 25 million square feet when I was still mayor, and make it into residential at Yale Town. And I remember saying to people that time, that will give people the chance to walk to work. We have a faster growing number of people walking to work in Vancouver today than ever before, and that's the best form of transit.
Finally, a comment that I probably would have asked off the top if it hadn't been for the throne speech yesterday, a very disturbing protest just across the street on the art gallery lawn at the unveiling of the clock this week. How concerned are you about Olympic security as a result of that event?
Well, I think we have to be very diligent with regard to security. I think, to be fair to the police in that case, I think they were probably thinking that the people that would go after anyone would go after the politicians, not the young woman that was standing at the mic. But I think we do have to be aware of that. And I think it was a shame, because I think that we are, you know, people that are constructive in dealing with housing know that we're working on that, know that we've got a very aggressive program on it, know that we're working with the city on it. So I think those people wanted to create a disruption, and I'm sorry it happened.
My thanks to BC Premier Gordon Campbell. The news headlines next, then Ian Bruce, climate change specialist with the David Suzuki Foundation.